This is Josh Wynn recording at 1:37 Friday, May 20th, 2005, and I am here with Detective Dave White. Okay. The question that we were given is, describe and analyze changes and trends in crime and law enforcement in Hillsborough, Oregon from 1980 to 2005. And my first question is, what is your background in the community?
I've been a police officer in Washington, in the Washington County area since September 1st, 1991. I started working for NAIS in 1991. I worked there for 7 years and worked here for 7 years.
Okay. What is the high-tech team in your definition like? I did some research and I found that it disbanded.
It was disbanded. We used to have a high-tech team that had the FBI, the city of Beaverton, and the city of Hillsborough. And we started that probably 1995, before things really got popping out here. Intel was out here, but there wasn't a semi-micro system. I mean, there wasn't the synopsis. All those big ones hadn't come out yet. And the chief saw a need to have someone to deal with cybercrime. The FBI also was game, so they came out and played. And they did a lot of work for Intel, a lot of work for Tektronix, because of the Beaverton connection with Tektronix. And they'd fly all over the U.S. working on computer chip tests, working on program tests, working on the big one now is the theft of proprietary information, so basically human theft. Yeah. I work for a company, I know things about this company, and some head hunter will come out, report to be someone to get information about me, and then they'll try and steal me away from the company by offering me better benefits, more stuff. But anyway, worked that for a while, and then things kind of slowed down with that. I was requiring a lot of traveling. We were doing a lot of cases that weren't necessarily Oregon-based because we were working with the FBI. So we were working all sorts of cases all over the U.S. And then the FBI ultimately, one of the guys retired, which was Joe Chiefs, a gentleman you talked about. And he retired, and that kind of set things on its end. So, and our computer forensic examiner went back and a road officer. So we didn't really have the fun, and also Intel pulled the money that they had in the money. Okay.
So what happened after that?
What happened after that was, to fill the void, they kind of added just recently the RCFL, which is the Regional Computer Forensics Laboratory, that's ran by the FBI. And what they do is computer forensics. Up until that time, the only people who really did computer forensics were local. You could send it some places, you could send it back east to be examined, but that could take a year or more. Locally, we used to do it for all sorts of agencies in Oregon. And then our computer forensic examiner went back to the road and we lost all that experience and all the money. We put a lot of money into getting that training. It's rather extensive. Nothing compared to what the guys at the Computer Forensics Laboratory go through, but still $80,000 probably would be close to get a guy trained, a police officer trained to do it. When we lost our detective back to the road, we ended up going with kind of a, we called it the Police Reserve Specialist Program. And what those were big brains, guys who worked computers for a living. They were just normal, everyday guys who came out on their weekends, like weekend warriors, and did forensics on computers. These were guys who wrote the programs on how to do the forensics. So they were extremely, still are, extremely bright individuals. Ray Nessie was in charge of that program right now, and he was a big wig at Intel, but he's big brain guys, and they're all big brain guys when it comes to computers. They call themselves geeks. I'm personally not fond of that term. Knock yourself out. You don't call yourself a geek. You can have that. But they are extremely good at what they do. And so right now, what we do is when we get a computer, when we get a computer-related crime, whether it be usually right now it's forgery is a big thing, or internet porn. Internet porn goes to RCFO. And it goes there because they're FBI agents, they may be from us, they're a task force officer, it's a task force. And so they've been cleared by the FBI, and they have to go get their psych yearly to make sure that the child porn's not screwing up. And our guys just do paper crime or threats over the internet, or thefts, that kind of thing, that they can trace back to.
Could you explain more about computer forensics, like how it's done? Like
I can try.
Okay.
But you know, I'll give you the layman. The bottom line is nothing's erased. You can get the program that supposedly thrashed the information, shred it. There's always little pieces of it everywhere. A good example would be we had a case a few years ago where a woman was assaulted by another man. And they met on the internet, not her and him, her and his wife had met on the internet, dealing with something, husbands who were always gone. And so they got this husbands who were always gone wife. Well, this guy ended up not being gone all the time. He was around, so he started praying when the women were in the club, and he would go over to their house, and then, oh, I forgot my wallet, I gotta go get my wallet, leaving his wife at home and go back and sexual assault, or at least very inappropriate conduct with the victim. And he had sent her an email. She had deleted the email. And we were able to find, she told us what it said, kind of her recollection, which was right on the money. And we were able to find that in a group of gibberish. Basically, we were able to find exactly what he wrote, which was on her computer. Now, it didn't say that it came from him, didn't do any of that, but it corroborated her statement to us as far as it was from an email. We knew that. And we knew that that was written. It didn't say it came from him, but it's pretty obvious based on her statement that it had come in and been deleted. So they can go back and they can find that. They can find little pieces of the photographs are pretty easy to bring back up. The text is a little more difficult because you're looking at a whole lot of, I mean, when it comes out, you know, like if you hit print on the, I don't know if you've ever seen it on old printers, they used to print out every type of print this computer could make, or this printer could make. So you have these Russian backward R's, all sorts of crazy stuff, and that's what it looks like. A bunch of O's, you know, and then maybe some weird looking symbols, and then some words. But they can get a piece all together and give you something. And those guys also, they bring board girls. They really work hard. They know everyone when it comes. So what they do is what we do. We take a computer, we image a hard drive, and there's a technical term for it, but basically it's like DNA. You can, once you image the hard drive, it's almost like DNA. It is actually more accurate than DNA, and DNA is pretty accurate, but it will say exactly that this came from this computer. We don't need to take the original hard drive to court, like most pieces of evidence. We bring the originals in. You don't have to do that because the forensics examiners can get up there and testify that I tagged this, I marked it here, this, I wish I could remember the term for you. There's a term for it. This basically print, genetic, in this case computer print, is from this computer and is theirs. So they'll image the hard drive, and with today's hard drive, it can take 4 or 5 hours. If you have a gigabyte, 130 gigabyte hard drive, it can take 3 or 4 hours to image it, and then they return it back into evidence. Go ahead.
It's okay.
Anyway, so they take it from evidence, they image the hard drive, they return the original back to evidence, and then they do the forensics on it. They have computer programs, different computer programs that will, kind of like a search engine. They can search that computer and find out if they're looking for JPEGs or MPEGs or Photoshop documents, whatever they're looking for, they can find them in there. They can give, you know, words that they're looking for, and it'll pull up through all this. I call it gibberish, I don't know, I'm sure there's text. But all this gibberish, it'll find that word for you. You know, if you're looking for Bangladesh, you can type in Bangladesh, and it'll find the word. Whenever that computer gets served to site or received information, that's image on the hard drive, it'll pull it up.
Now, I've heard of people using magnets to wipe out hard drives. Does it do anything? Or?
If you can wipe a hard drive, and you can remove information from it. If you wipe a hard drive, I'm sure a magnet strong enough will do it. And that will completely remove information, all information, but then it gives you a pretty much useless hard drive. So your operating system, everything else that's on there, is gone.
Yeah, I was just thinking if someone was to break into your house and you had stuff on your computer, you would want to wipe it and wouldn't care if it was damaged and
right.
If that was a problem.
No, we haven't had people just, I mean, that's more of a criminal history thing. If you're breaking into someone's house, usually you're taking.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm thinking of like the police or like busting in down the house and you're.
No, we don't.
So, what specific high-tech crimes do you deal with now since the high-tech team's gone? Like,
well, we have one detective who pretty much, he was on the high-tech crimes team, Matt Shannon, and he's our go-to guy on a lot of cases, not just high-tech cases, but he's a stellar detective. But on our high-tech cases, a lot of the ones we deal with are eBay scams, we get a lot of thefts just going over, it's scamming. I mean, you have a worldwide medium that you can use to rip people off. And people in Hong Kong are taking people. I mean, it's amazing how much information people will get. Ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. So if you, for every 100 people that are wise, there's probably another 50 who aren't. So we have a lot of those cases. We have also IFCC complaints, which it's International Federation of Computer Crimes, I think, is the IFCC acronym. They send us stuff all the time where someone's gotten ripped off. You know, it's somewhere in Nigeria, they're saying, I'm a prince, and I have millions of dollars, and if you will send me, you know, if you'll cash this check from your account and send me the money, you can keep millions, or give me your bank account information so I can transfer this money to you. And people fall for it. You know, the simple, if it's too good to be true, it is. You know, it's too good to be true. I don't understand. No one's going to walk in and give you $1,000. It's not going to happen. Now, if Bill Gates walked in and gave you $1,000, I might buy that. But some guy with a name I can't pronounce, a country I can't pronounce, wanted to give me something. Where do you get my name from? Now me, I'm pretty confident. Dave White, there's $100 or $1,000, tens of thousands of us. That might be plausible. Simple email it, you got the wrong guy. I don't know anyone in Kazakhstan or wherever the heck you are. But people are going. So he works those. And some of them we can work, some of them we can't. You know, if they're outside of our jurisdictional boundaries, which is the state of Oregon, we're not going to be able
to do. The type of information you suggest people never give out online?
Anything
at all?
You don't need to give out your name, you don't need to give out your social, certainly not your social security number, certainly not your phone number, never your address. You know, anything that you give out, your age, even if you say I'm 21, oh, and then pretty later on in the conversation, someone said, oh, well, what month were you born? What day were you born on? I mean, do the math. There really isn't anything that I would be giving out online. When I get the phone calls at home, yeah, that's nice. I'm not going to be talking to you. If you want to reach me, you know other ways to reach me. If you're with the people who I bought my house from, if you're with the mortgage company, if you're with whomever, you have more than one phone number to reach me, I can knock yourself out and call me my way. And I'm still not going to give you my social security number. I'm still not going to give you my date of birth. you're calling me. You know that information. You don't need to verify it with me. Are you afraid you missed dial? You know what? Call back. And it's just, I think you're a fool to do that. And you will get burned sooner or later. And even with all that protection, you could still get burned.
I was curious about like online job applications such as Monster, where they ask for certain information that would be like that.
Yep. And
how would
that work? A lot of that stuff that's been protected, it can still be, they can hack into it. But I think it's less likely. I think they try and make the internet truly as safe as they can make it. They're constantly re-upping their encryption. And I buy things online. I do. If you're going to use a credit card, don't use a debit card. A debit card has a $500 limit before you're no longer liable. A credit card is usually zero. So if someone gets your credit card number, it goes crazy in Las Vegas, and you don't get them any of the profits that they may have, you're not going to be charged by the credit card company. It's going to be a hassle, but it's not going to be like your debit card where it's money out of your pocket. The other big one that we deal with, the computer crime that we deal with, is pornography and child porn. And we have the detective who just called me as a task force officer for innocent images, which she's got a real interesting job. It's a horrific job. In my mind, she goes online with a young girl or a young boy and goes into the chat room. And I was horrified when I was working with her how quickly she could go into one chat room and have 40 perverts that morning asking her to call on cyber with them, do the instant message thing, or just craziness. Photo is just a world of perverts. Every pedophile in the world has an opportunity to jump on. The other interesting thing about the internet is you can be anyone you want to be on the internet, and that's the danger. Because you may be talking to someone who you think is your best friend in the entire world that you met on the internet, and they told you that they're the same age as you and have the same interests, and they may be a 600-pound fat man in New York City who wears ladies' underwear. You don't know. Nor will you ever know. They can send you photos. This is me and my dad, when that's not their photo. It's just, a lot of people like the internet for that. Hey, I would just avoid that. The internet's great to pick up information. I'm not sure it's so great to be talking to you. I think it's dangerous. Unless you keep in mind that the person you're talking to may be so completely full of bovine scat that, yeah, she says she's 16 years old, but really, she's a 50-year-old man in Virginia. It is. Think about it. I can put any screen name I want on. You know what? 16-year-old goths. I would get hit on left and right by 50-year-old perverts, 30-year-old perverts, 20-year-old perverts. It's just unreal. She can go in those chat rooms instantly. I'm not kidding. She goes in there and she gets 15 or 16. Hey, once I ever had a call me this, that. And she has this new persona she's created. She's now on playing this persona. It's awesome. It's crazy. And what she does is basically get in conversations with people, and then they'll send her porn in a matter of moments, usually child porn, or they'll send her, they'll want to meet with her, and they call those travelers, and she agrees to meet them, and the FBI plays by different rules than we do. They have a lot more set guidelines than we would have. For us, if we agreed to meet somewhere, we'd go there. If they showed up, we'd arrest them. The FBI doesn't usually be them. They have a whole, I don't know what all their procedures are, but they have a whole set guideline on how they have to play them, what rules they have to play by for the assistant U.S. attorney to prosecute the case. In Oregon, if you agree to meet a 15-year-old online and you show up there, you've got problems.
What type of tools do you use to solve these high-tech crimes?
Computers. The forensics guys. I mean, really, they're the ones who will make our cases for us. We can have a lot of information that we don't use. There are no areas here for us to view. The detective who does the case does not view the child porn. That's a forensic examiner's job. There's things in life you don't need to see. And that, to me, is one of them. And for most cops, most of the guys, what's the big deal? And all you have to do is see one photograph that's graphic and say, I never need to see that again. What was that recent one with the beheadings in Iraq? You know, that's flying around the internet. And people wanted to see that. And they look at it, and most people would be horrified at what they saw. I didn't need to go online and look. I don't need to see it. I'm sure it's horrific. I can imagine it's horrific. I don't need to actually visually look at it and feel sick as a result. So we try and keep our people from seeing it. There's just no reason for it. Absolutely none. The forensics examiners, that's their job. They find it. They take a couple of photos. They put it together and hand it to the DA. And say, this is your case. Federally, they have to have over 80 images. State, you can have one.
Who dealt with these type of crimes before 95, before the
crisis? Nobody. It was the local agencies, and we get computers, and I was working in Cornelius when we informed you out here. But we get a computer, and prior to that, you'd send it. I think there was a guy named Bill who did it. I don't know before 1991, but probably not a whole lot. Computers weren't a big thing. They were a big thing. They just weren't. Everybody didn't have them. You still typed your reports by hand or by a standard old typewriter. Word processors were not really, that word processing programs weren't all that either. Or maybe they were, but they just the printers hung out on them. But we sent them to a guy named Bill, and his turnaround time was extremely long. And then you weren't necessarily getting the same information that you get now. The information you get now is great. You also didn't have anywhere close, even on our old high tech crime scene, we had no one who touches these, or CFO guys, as far as experience. They go through, it takes them about 6 months to get certified, and then they're experts, court-certified experts, meaning that the court has recognized their skill and ability to be an expert in the field. And they go through mock trials, where both defense attorneys and U.S. attorneys grill them. They give them a case that they have to do forensics on, and they will read them because they know as much as the examiners know. And so the examiner has to defend themselves and their findings and work. So it's a pretty grueling, brutal thing that I just did not do.
Before HCT was disbanded, how did it impact high-tech crimes?
Well, it certainly had an impact for Intel, and it certainly still does. Because of the training that Detective Chan received, he still works extremely close with Intel. And he'll go all over the state. As a matter of fact, we just went out of state. He went down to a California city on a guy who was headhunting people. He was calling up, claiming to be an Intel employee. And he had all the information he needed. He said all the right buzzwords. Used everything he needed to use to get people's passwords, to get information on people, so he could call them and try and... He would not call them. He would then give that information to the company that was employing him to dig up information, home phone numbers, home addresses, all sorts of stuff on them. Now, he would... What the crime he was committing is identity theft, because he would purport himself to be... I would report myself to be Doug Eric, who's the coast. I'm a detective sergeant. He's the other sergeant in our unit. I would say that I'm Doug Eric and I need this information. I have my proof, the information that Doug Eric has, like maybe a passcode or something like that. My intranet's not working, not my internet, but intranet. Can you give me, so and so's name? Hey, thanks. Oh, dang, I can't get hold of him there. What's his home phone? All right, well, I was going to stop by his place. Does he still live on Pleasantville? No, he lives over here. Oh, thank you very much. So you get that information itself. And that's a crime. want you to do that because the information that person possesses in their head is proprietary. When you go to Intel, you'll sign a non-compete clause. You won't disclose any information that you've learned while you're in Intel for like 3 years or 2 years to another company. That's big business. You know, those processors and everything else. That's big stuff. So, yeah, usually you sign a non-compete clause too, which you can include a competitor. So, that's not everybody who works there. But if you got the big brain and you're doing the high-tech stuff there, then you have to sign up. And the information in your head is as valuable as any computer. So he does that. He doesn't travel as much. That changed. We don't do cases in Florida too often. He did do some back east in Chicago. He did some in Boston because they originated out of here. And we work close with Intel. We also work close with other high tech companies. Anyone who needs high tech help, we get it from them. And our PRS. Our lab tech guys. The civilians who are police reserve specialists who will do forensics. There was a moving company here locally who had a guy who had put in a sniffer program. And a sniffer program was sent back information. Like emails that are being sent in a department home. And so he could read all those emails. And then he would program under aliases, Yahoo accounts or Hotmail accounts, he would be sending threatening emails to them. And our forensics guys would find a sniffer program. Not the RCFL, our guys, the ones here at Hillsborough, the PRS, the group formerly known as PRS. Police Reserve Specialists, the lab guys were able to find this sniffer program, trace it back to who it came from, and we were able to obtain a warrant in his house that information. So to answer your question, it hasn't, the dynamics have changed. The way we do more local business than far off business, and really there are other larger entities involved than just Hillsborough, Beaver Team, the FBI. Now it's the FBI, Portland, Gresham, Beaverton, who are make up the RCFL. They don't investigate crime, they do forensics on computers. So it's now up to the individual agencies to investigate their own computer crimes in their neck of the woods. If it rises to the level of being out of state, that's an FBI issue. And as I said earlier, the FBI runs by a different set of rules, a much more rigid standard than you run in the state, which is odd, because Oregon gives you far more civil liberties than the state constitution does. You have far more civil rights living in the state of Oregon than you would living under the federal constitution. We provide our people more protection from unreasonable searches and seizures than the federal constitution does. But for whatever reason, the FBI is, they just have to do things their way. And the U.S. attorney has to do things their way. And there's a lot of hoops sometimes you gotta go through. But to get a warrant federally, it's easier than to get a warrant statesman. You know that?
No, yeah.
What do you do? You are afforded far more rights. I'm talking a lot more rights as a citizen of the state of Oregon than you are as a citizen of the United States of America.
I just know you don't have sales tax, which is...
That's a 10. No,
yeah.
That's a good thing. Maybe.
What's the most serious high-tech crime you've dealt with?
It's child crime. Without a doubt. The victimizing a child, the children, and then re-victimizing. They're not fake pictures. That, you know, it's one thing to look at a pornographic picture and say, I have no idea who this person is. And they're old enough, they're in their 20s, or they're 18, that's still to me very young, but they're in their 20s or whatever, and you're looking at a pornographic picture, it doesn't register. They have the choice to do what they're doing. Not necessarily all of them, don't get me wrong. that could be its own thing. But the 8-year-olds, the 6-month-olds, the 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds, it's not a choice thing. They're being victimized. And somebody is taking photographs of that, and those freaks are putting it out there, and other freaks are putting it out there. And I think Paul has a special question.
What are some of the new high-tech kinds that are recently developed?
The big ones are the Nairobi scan, the ones where, you know, send me this money. My favorite ones are the cars. The cars they're buying cars online with bad checks and paying, and then some guy will call you up and say, hey, you want to earn $100? Once again, you don't say, how'd you get my number? Who the heck are you? Yeah, I want to earn $100. Go pick up this car for me at this location, and I'll send you, you know, I'll give you $100 cash. So you'll go pick up the car, which was bought with a stolen check, a $40,000 automobile. You'll drive it to another person who is told to give you $100 because they get $500, and then they'll take it to another place, like the docks in Portland. They'll package it up, put it on a ship, and move it overseas. And they just got a $40,000 car that they could sell in their country for who knows how much. Brands bank and mail, they cost them $600. Real cash. So they just get a bunch of people who are foolish enough, once again, it's too good to be true, it really is. $100 to go pick up a car, why not? No one can give you $100, you'll pick up a car, a brand new car. Most people would say, I'll drive it for free. I like driving new cars. So that's the biggest one we deal with. Is the internet fraud. It's just rampant. And eBay. Yeah.
How does the media represent the high-tech crimes versus the reality?
You know, I think they do. They can talk hours about the media. I'm not sure they represent anything well. That's a fair statement. They like to sensationalize everything. However, I think they could do a much better job on putting out the information that don't be a fool and say it that way. You know, here we talk about this poor person who gave all their savings away to some moron who was, you know, the guy, the prince in Nairobi, who was, you know, needing to put this money in their account so he could make millions. No, the answer is no. No, no, no. I think they can do that. The high-tech thing is going to get worse. There's no doubt about it. I mean, people, I don't know how many people do online banking. I don't know how many people. I do, Christmas time. I mean, I'd much rather shop at home, spend half the money, you know, look at the deals in the paper, and then go online and find the same thing with shipping for half the price from some place in Hoboken, New York, or Hoboken, New Jersey, wherever Hoboken is, someplace, you know, wherever in Chicago, they'll send it to me because they're a big online store and they get it for half the price. So I think that availability is out there and it will continue. And every time we develop something that is 100% secure, there is 100% chance that someone else will find a way to crack into it, you know. If we can get some of these geeks outside of their houses and doing something else, you know, I could fix it. I really could. Take away all computer video games and then short circuit every cable and TV in the world. And then you would force people to do something other than sit at home, drinking soda, eating chips, and figuring out how to hack it and mask it. Wouldn't be much fun,
yeah.
Because I do enjoy my PlayStation.
That won't be off topic in a few years. What are the demographics of the people who commit high-tech crimes? Or is there
I don't think it is. It could be white, black, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. Male, female. Majority of them is male. I mean, the majority of the people we see are male. That doesn't mean anything. Big brains come in all different colors, shapes, sexes of people. And it does take something. I'm not sure that it's, it takes some intimate knowledge to be a crook. Some of them are just plain stupid. I mean, some aren't good at it, but you don't have to be good at it. Most of these letters that we get from foreign countries saying send me money or give me your bank account numbers, they can't spell right. They can't capitalize or punctuation shot. That should be a clue. Some reports to speak English, yet they don't. You know, they're sending an email that has common misspellings. I don't know, if I was a crook, I'd want to be a little more professional, but I don't think it matters, because we as Americans will take the bait. I think we as people, the human race, take the bait. So demographics doesn't play a part of it.
How well are we able to keep up, like, the criminal skills?
We're not. And the reason for that is a lot of this is occurring overseas. You know, and we don't have an international police department. We've got Interpol, but Interpol, you know, I was in the Army. I was an MP in the Army. When I was in the Army, if you bounced a check, we were at your door. And in about 1996, I called a friend of mine who was still in the Army, and I asked him how things were going. And when I got out in 1991, when I became a police officer in civilian role, and DOD, Department of Defense, had started to take over a lot of the roles of the MPs as far as being a police department on the military installation and doing a lot of the investigative stuff that we used to do. And I asked him how things were going, and he said it was crazy that now, in the Army, you could write bad checks as long as you stayed under $10,000, they weren't interested in you. Now, the Army is a different thing. It is a cross-section of the United States, and most of the people in the enlisted ranks, which I love, are generally from not well-off families. You know, if you have money, you're probably going to college. Not always the case. I will be stereotypical here. If you have money, you're probably going to college, and when you're getting your education, if you're going to join the Army, you're going to be an officer. Or you're going to join any branch of the service, you're going to be an officer. Well, when you talk about enlisted, we're talking about people who, we had guys from Kentucky who never wore shoes. We had guys from inner city New York who had never seen the country. They lived their whole life in, you know, 50 blocks. It was just, you have an extreme cross-section of the U.S., so you have also an extreme cross-section of crooks. Guys who from New York know how to play the game, New York City, New York, Harlem, Brooklyn, wherever, Manhattan, Staten Island, wherever you came from, hailed from, big city, Philadelphia, they knew street scams. And, you know, guys from Kentucky necessarily, they didn't know how to do that, the street scam stuff. So they became targets and victims. I became a victim I played beat up. And I'm in the Army, and finally a friend of mine from New York says, you're holding your cards if you know nothing about Pinochle. I won't explain it, it's a long thing, but you have your hearts, your dials, your stage, your clubs. Well, you hold them usually so that you have a break in between the blacks and the black ones. So the reds are stuffed in there somewhere so that you can see how many you have in each suit. And they could see where I was drawing my cards from, and they could see if I drew an ace and then drew a nine, they knew everything in between. They could count the cards and say, well, he's got a powerful hand, and I'd lose. And we bet on it, and I'd lose money. And he says, you got to mix up your cards, and they don't know. Just that kind of scam. So these guys know this information, and they're going out spending $9,999 at the commissary, at the PX, the post exchange, buying brand new furniture, dining room furniture, a whole house. I got new furniture in my whole house. And I'm under the 10,000. So they know the game. Well, these guys overseas know the game too. In the US, in Hillsborough, Washington County, Oregon, I can write a check, a bad check, but if it's under a certain dollar amount, the district attorney's office isn't going to prosecute it. It costs them more money than it costs the bank or whomever to lose the money. That's just the way it works. Fraud, which is the internet, that's where you're going to get ripped. Fraud and child porn. Those are really the only two things they can do to you. Steal your identity, which I would consider fraud. And child porn. Really, there's nothing else they can do. They can't electrocute you yet from the internet. sitting behind me, your computer doesn't blow up, that kind of thing. So those are the biggest. I rambled on that a little bit.
It's okay. What motivates you and others to do this kind of work?
Well, I'll be quite honest with you. I'm not huge into the high-tech thing. I'm not. I got a computer at home. I enjoy the computer. I play fantasy baseball on the computer. Don't do too many video games on the computer. I'm cool. Enjoy playing PlayStation. Anyway. But I do love the internet. You know, you can find anything on the internet quickly, which is sweet. And that makes our job not just high tech, it makes our job easier. You know, you can find out crazy. I mean, just the amount of information that's out there about anyone is crazy. But I don't think computers make my job easier as far as typing reports, writing search forms. In the old days, you type them out, and then if there was corrections, you got out the whiteout, and you had to type, and it was a mess. Now, you can cut and paste everything. Oh, I wrote a warrant kind of like that before. I'll take that, boilerplate, put it over here. That side of computers made our lives easier, but all it's done is open new doors for crooks, truly. It's awesome and it's fun, but it's also a pain in our backside.
In what ways does the high-tech community help you interact with the criminals?
Help us interact.
Oh, okay. Catch criminals. No, okay.
They're Johnny on the spot. What you have to look at is places like Intel, places like Sun Microsystems, places like, here we go again. This is Dave. All right. I'm in an interview right now, but I'll get with you when I get out. So, dang it, I lost my... Oh, how they help us. They, a lot of their guys, they've got guys at Intel who go on to eBay and look at something, or Tektronix, same thing. There's scopes, there's all sorts of things, high-tech stuff you can buy that people have ripped off from. And they'll go on there and they'll buy it. And then they'll call us and say, hey, I just bought this computer, and it's our laptop, and it was stolen out of RA4. Ron Rager's floor. Really? Yep, who had access to it? We'll tell you, you know, they basically make our case for us and hand us. They don't have arrest powers. So they're constantly on the look and constantly aware of what's going on. People who are calling in there. When you call Intel, your voice is recorded, guaranteed. So you're calling up saying you are John Smith and you're not, or don't find out. That information is so valuable. It's such a big business. It's like any good high-tech movie. Cool stuff, the amazing things they can do. So they have an extremely helpful.
Is there any outreach programs for like high-tech crimes, like DARE for drugs or?
Yeah, we have CARE, okay. Which is, cyber awareness, cyber communications. And they do it with different kids. I forget what the age group is, but I want to say it's older than DARE. DARE is fifth graders. Right? I want to say this is junior high, and it's not a required curriculum. But they teach them about how to interact on the internet safely, which is important. Parents who aren't doing that, parents who are letting their kids go off. You know, we have travelers, we have people who come from all over the United States to come visit that 15, 14, 17-year-old male or female in high school, at their high school, because they talked to them for the last 6 months on the internet, and probably some pretty inappropriate stuff, or what I as a parent would call inappropriate. And, you know, you got to know how to protect yourself on the internet. They teach them how to protect themselves. They teach them how not to give out information. But you just don't want to give out any personal information. So it's called Cure.
Is there anything else you want me to tell you that we mean us that we haven't touched upon already? Or?
That's a question I use when I interview people. Is there anything you want me to understand? You don't feel I understand now. You're giving me the rope. See, I don't like this. You're standing by the door. You're blocking my exit. See? Ow, that's a rubber hose. Stop it. Yep, see, no video. There's no evidence. You hit me with the rubber hose. He's the police. Yeah, oh, man. I'm suing you.
Take it, you get that a lot.
But no, we don't use rubber hoses. We got a New York City phone book around. No, we don't do that either.
You have the two phone books again. But
are there two phone books?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, no.
I'm not necessarily a geek. I'm just lacking in old school technology.
No, my thing. Is your title geek? Do you do that?
I'm not considered a geek because I've been in martial arts for 12 years, so I kind of fit outside the bounds, but I am with the smarter people.
You're with the computer folks.
Yeah.
So you're probably knowing everything I'm telling you, and thinking this poor layman cop doesn't know anything.
No. I know my friends would know.
Yeah, there was a comment once made that if we could get the kids and generally they are boys, generally. I'm sure there's women who do it. But boys are programmed. Men and women are programmed differently. We just are. They don't write books. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus for no reason. And I think that the computer allure is far more that of men than is of women. I'm not sure why. That may change. But young men who do viruses, most of them are young men who do viruses and the other stuff that goes on, if we could get them out of their house, a life, something, you know, Star Trek. I'll bet you while Star Wars is playing, we'll have less viruses. I love Star Wars. So everybody will be out of their house just to go watch it. So if we could do movies like that every week, we'd be good to go. Solve the crime. The other thing is it wasn't until just a few years ago that we actually had computer crimes warning, where we could charge someone with a crime for doing computer-related things. Either computer crimes, me hacking into your computer, or pornography. A child is sexually, a child is a crime, displaying sexually and something. I'm not that child porn expert by any means. I'm just I don't like interviewing child porn. Cheryl Banks is the best. Absolute can't cop. She can sit there and get anyone to roll. They're doing crazy things. We're not just talking child porn. We're talking adults who are selling their children over the internet, who are going places to meet with other adult men, boys and girls. Parents are taking their children over there to be sexually abused by someone else. It's absolutely horrific, and that's the internet. It would be very hard to do that without the internet. I wouldn't be able to. She recently worked a case, and you have seen it in the news, maybe not, about an attorney in Hollywood who lived in, he's a Hollywood attorney, but who lived in Arizona. And she said she was a 35-year-old male with a 15-year-old daughter who wanted somebody to teach her daughter life lessons. And this guy, they talked about sex, they talked about sex with the child, right on down the line. So when he met up with them in the motel that he paid for, on the airline ticket that he paid for, to have sex with this child, this was not the first time he'd done it. That's horrific. People would sell their children. Like I said, I'm not a religious man, but I hope for those folks who have. And I hope there's a special place for them. Thank you. No. So I couldn't deal with that work. That's why that she goes every year and gets her site. And but she's got a cool place. She went down to she went to Philadelphia. She went to Washington D.C. Probably even Texas last year. She's got fun places for like a week. They have some shrink talk to her about how adjusted she is.
Is there any documents you suggest that could help us answer our question?
Which question?
Anything relating to crimes in Hillsborough or anything in the high-tech area or like statistics?
You know, I don't know, Jeff. What I'll do is I'll check with our crime analyst people, also the brain computer folks. And that is one area. You were saying how high-tech has affected us. I'm not sure if it's positive or negative effect, but we have so much information that we never had in the past. For example, we could tell you where all the vehicle breaking elsewhere through. You know, it's a needle in a haystack, but we can tell you where those are. That's no guarantee that we're going to catch them. But I mean, we can tell you time of day, day and night, time of day, day or night, location, and they can do all this mapping stuff and tell you hot on a big map. I'll show you one before you go that looks really cool. But as a cop working the beat, you say to yourself, yeah, that's nice. They generally don't go back to the same fishing hole, because when you're talking about vehicle break-ins, amazingly enough, every street you drive down in the city, there's a vehicle. And they probably got cool stuff in there that a crook would want. So it's interesting information. Then you get into statistics. And you're going to go to college, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
If you have to take a statistics class, you will find that I found it. It was the most mind-numbing, huge waste of time. Because I can give you statistics, and you can review the same statistics I gave you and come up with a different idea of what the statistics mean. And that's the problem with them. And that's some of the problem with how much information you can now get, because a computer is everything you do. Going back to no, I shouldn't answer these. I was thinking high-tech detectors. We talked about the road, and that completely changed. High-tech has completely changed the way we do business on the road. When I started law enforcement in 91, this is in 1980, the same way. The radio would squawk. You would say, if my number was 1409, you'd say 1409, copy your call. I'd say 1409, go ahead. And I'd have paper and pen ready. You know, assault occurring now at this location. Boom, boom, boom. 10-4. Good buddy. Yep. 10-4. Throw it back, throw the mic back in the cradle and go. And then I'd be like looking at the address. Oh, what was that address? Oh, yeah, figure out how to get there. Oh, yeah, this is the address. Now we have MDTs, mobile data terminal. Yeah, they rock. They're even getting more high tech now. Yeah, it beeps at you. You hit it, they dispatch you a call, no airtime. Unless it's priority one, which is a bad call by the gun, they'll announce that. But other than that, if you're just going to get a cold vehicle break-in, a cold burglary, a cold sex abuse, it'll pop up on your screen. You hit an in route button, which ties it instantly into a computer. You hit when you arrive. You hit when you clear. You do your clearance code in there. You can write your report on this computer. Take out your little stick thing, I forget what they're called, I don't know, those sticks.
Memory stick?
Yeah. And you take that in, see, I'm the wrong guy for this, I'm telling you. Anyway, and then you plug that into a computer here and hit print, and it'll print out your report for you. So that has changed. That gives you cross streets, it gives you premise history of that place, how many times you've been out there before. It's amazing. That is very valuable. I now don't call dispatch and say, I need to run this gap. You know, Josh went and did work this. I can go in and go on my computer in my car I sim, and I can run your criminal history, I can run out-of-state driver's licenses, in-state driver's licenses, registrations, everything's right there for me. That has changed the way we and the way dispatch do business incredibly, or positive. When those computer systems go down, it has no more effect than it did when, in the old days, not that old, but 1981, when we got on the radio and LEDS was unavailable. LEDS is the law enforcement data system. Law enforcement data system gives us all the information we need. State, National Crime Information Center gives us federal information. So if you're one in New York, it'd come back on NCIC, it would come back in LEDS. LEDS is just for the state of Oregon. But if you're on probation in Oregon, I get that on LEDS. So when the computers were down then, okay, you were in the same boat. It just makes it, I don't have to keep asking dispatch, what was the make of that car again? Or what was the year of that car? I can just go on my own computer, run it. So that has been invaluable. And I don't have to sit there and run you and, you know, while I'm sitting there talking to you, I can go back to my car, watch you, type in my little thing, and go, oh, you got a felony warrant. Yeah, this guy sent me another car. Yeah, well, it led to slow. I'm trying to run them, but it's slow. By your time. Better carry a G.I. Joe in your pocket.
G.I. Joe.
You carry a G.I. Joe in your pocket, then you can pull it out and say, you know, he's got a phone more.
Yeah, he does.
Think we should arrest him?
Yeah, I think so.
He thinks I should arrest him. See, I don't like to fight. I don't like to. So if they think I'm crazy, they probably won't find me.
He's talking
fast. Yeah. Or you tell them, hey, you know, that's too big. Well, I like to fight. You have to turn up your hands on your back. Those are secret information. So that kind of stuff is helping us. And computer aided dispatch, CAD, that tells us all the information we need to know about the call we're going on. We have PPDS, the Fort Police Data System, which we're members of pretty much every in Washington County. And that if you have contact with the police and a report is generated, your name's in it, we can look up my name in there and I'll get contact with the police because I called in when someone broke into my car as a victim. And, you know, my information's on there. So for us, that kind of information, we can't. So high-tech that way. When you're saying it doesn't help, then I'm saying that kind of stuff, yes. It creates more crime on the internet side, but on the actual day-to-day operations, you can't beat it. It's incredible. I'm guessing by the time I retire, I'll be tapping my badge to talk to dispatch. Go ahead. Our radios get smaller and smaller, your cell phones get smaller and smaller, everything gets smaller and smaller. And pretty soon, you know, that there will be a system in place that, you know, forget to push to talk, I look like someone from Star Trek going, danger.
How does like technology like for training officers and like equipment change?
Oh, nuts. Yeah. Huge, huge. I gotta go through the contact. Actually I gotta go through numbers. Okay. No, I gotta go. My wife's got a it's changed a lot. We use simulation guns, which we didn't use in the past. They're not paint guns, they hurt a heck of a lot more. But they mark FX marking cartridges, they hit you and they hurt, but they provide instant real life. Kind of without killing each other, it's the closest we can get to actual combat shooting or those kind of things. And then we have some simulators in the Ranger 2000 that shoots a laser onto a screen that tells you whether or not you hit the bad guy. So for firearms, I've got to boogie.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.